Recovery Elevator, episode 474.
I do love that about recovery people is like the shedding of shame where you're just like, oh yeah, me too.
Welcome to the Recovery Elevator Podcast. My name is Paul Churchill. Thank you so much for joining us today. Listeners, on today's episode, we have Nick. He's 36 years old, from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and took his last drink on January 19th, 2021. Great job, Nick. I want to say thank you to all our Cafe Ari chat hosts. You guys are rock stars. Listeners, today is going to be a good day. I can feel it. In 2 weeks, on April 1st, registration opens for our annual retreat in the beautiful Rocky Mountains located outside of Bozeman, Montana. Now mark your calendars because this event usually fills up in the first couple days. And let's talk about sobriety fuel. I've heard from many who have signed up and then used this date on the calendar as motivation to remain alcohol-free through the summer. Now this event is from Wednesday, August 14th to Sunday, August 18th, and it is going to be a blast. If you'd like to check out the full itinerary and get pricing information on cabins and camping spots, go to recoveryelevator.com/Bozeman or click the link in the show notes. Thank you, Robin. And now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp.
When trying to explain some symptoms of depression to my husband, I used an analogy that my therapist talked to me about. Imagine that you have a set amount of spoonfuls of energy every day. When you are experiencing depression, simple tasks like brushing your teeth or combing your hair may require more spoons than usual, so you run out easily and feel drained. Now I can say, hey, I've got only one spoon left today. I don't have energy to go to that party. And he gets what I mean. Therapy really has provided me tools to communicate my feelings better. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/elevator today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/elevator.
Okay, let's get started. I like Instagram. In fact, I like social media, but it all depends on how you use it or how you leverage technology. Now, I like Instagram because it's a platform for artists, for teachers, for musicians, for dancers, and more to showcase their talents. While on Instagram the other day, I came across the most spectacular video with such a truth bomb, I immediately knew I had to turn it into a podcast episode and share it with y'all. Now, I'm going to play the audio for you in just a second, but let me set the scene first. It's a busy city street at nightfall when a gentleman comes to a skidding halt on his electric motorbike wearing a microwave as a helmet. When his motorbike comes to a stop, he pushes the open microwave door button and begins to speak. After speaking, he whips his head sideways to close the microwave door and then shoots off to provide another life lesson to those in need. Now here is the audio clip.
If you're serious about change, just know you're gonna go through some uncomfortable situations. Stop trying to dodge the process because in the long run, it's gonna make you better. And don't forget that shit, you heard?
Yes, there is a link in the show notes, and yes, I recommend watching this video. Again, here is what he said. If you're serious about change, just know you're going to go through some uncomfortable situations. Stop trying to dodge the process, because in the long run, it's going to make you better. And don't forget that shit, you heard? Let's take a look at the comment section. Someone says, I never thought that some of the most valuable life lessons would come from a dude wearing a microwave, but here we are. Another person says, not all heroes wear capes. This one happens to wear a microwave. Now, I love this video for several reasons. The creativity. He took a microwave, assuming it was broken, and turned it into a straight-up superhero costume. He then delivers 38 words of truth about change. If you're serious about change, there will be shitty times, but trust the process, because in the long run, you're going to be a better person. In fact, I can't say it better than he did. But let's remix this with alcohol for a second. Listeners, if you're going to quit drinking, yes, there will be some uncomfortable situations, but stop dodging the process, because in the long run, you're going to emerge as a way better person. We often think the truth will come from doctors, maybe someone wearing a white lab coat, or from a counselor or a therapist. But here we have a dude wearing a microwave as a helmet who only needed 22 seconds to tell us how it is. I am so curious to know what change that this man has made in his own life. Now, speaking of change, the biggest gift I get by far while doing the Recovery Elevator podcast is witnessing the change you all make on the daily. Now, this daily change, added up over many days, months, and even years, results in quite the transformation. Now, in just a moment, Chris is going to interview Nick, who has been to a handful of our events. I know he went to our first trip in Costa Rica, that's a sober travel trip, and then he went to one of our events in Bozeman. The change Nick has made in his life makes me believe he has a superhero costume in his closet that involves a microwave for a helmet and an electric motorbike. Actually, the more I think about it, I've never seen Nick and Superman in the same room together. So you're going to hear that Nick is serious about change, that Nick has pushed through uncomfortable situation and has emerged better on the other side. So Nick, thank you for allowing us to witness the blooming of you. I'm optimistic our paths will connect again, and it's been such an honor to be on this alcohol-free journey with you, my friend. And before we hear from Nick, we're going to hear from Go Brewing. But side note, thank you for your support, listeners, with our NA Beer Beverage collaboration with Go Brewing. We did a limited edition can with Go Brewing where we had the Recovery Elevator logo on the side of the can with a QR code to our website if you need help, if you're struggling with alcohol. And this thing sold out in 2 weeks. So I want to say thank you very much for your support, listeners. I've had people ask, are we going to do this again? I'm hoping so. And of course, I'm going to keep you guys in the loop. So before we hear from Chris and Nick, let's hear from Go Brewing.
Go Brewing is redefining the non-alcoholic craft beer landscape, and we are thrilled to have them as a partner on our podcast. Since launching in 2023, they've become a standout, fulfilling almost 25,000 orders across the U.S. and creating an impressive array of 23 distinct beer varieties. Their expertise hasn't gone unnoticed. Go Brewing won the gold and silver medals from the prestigious Best of Craft Beer Awards for their innovative brews, Suspended in a Sunbeam Pils, and Sunshine State Tropical Hazy IPA. Innovation is at their core, and they are pushing the boundaries of beer crafting. This includes pioneering gluten-free beer, like their wellness-infused Freedom Chill, enriched with ashwagandha and L-theanine. Their latest sensation? A double IPA that's a hit with beer enthusiasts, brimming with Mosaic, Citra, and Simcoe hops. And here's something special for our listeners. Save 15% off with the code ELEVATOR, plus free two-day shipping on orders of 3 6-packs or more. That's right, order it today, and in 2 days, it will be at your doorstep. Go Brewing is more than a brand for many. Their beer is a tool for people who want the experience without the alcohol. If you missed it, you can save 15% off with the code ELEVATOR, plus free two-day shipping on orders of 3 6-packs or more.
Recovery Elevator, please help me welcome Nick to the show. Nick, how you doing, brother?
Doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's a lukewarm day in the middle of February when we're recording in North Dakota, and I am okay with that.
Jeez, it is a lukewarm day here in Michigan as well, and I'm okay with that.
Considering the alternative, mild and moderate, that's not so bad. That is my listeners. That is my, we'll see. I'm not going to make any promises. That's my last reference to the weather, but I got to do it. Nick, before we get started, can you let listeners know how long you've been sober?
Yes. I just hit my 3-year sobriety date in January of this year.
Nice job. 3 years. That's a pretty big number, man. How you feeling?
It feels pretty awesome. There was a point in time I would not have believed you that I would have made it this far. So I'm happy to be here.
That's crazy, right? At the beginning, the idea of like multiple years, let alone one, it just seems like a insurmountable task. But to be able to hit 3, that's very cool. Did you do anything to celebrate?
I mean, I always like to celebrate with some pastries, baked goods, and hit up an AA meeting and celebrate with that family.
I like it. Nice little tradition.
Yeah.
Nick, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what you do for a living, age, any family or pets you care to tell us about? And most importantly, what do you like to do for fun?
Definitely. So my name is Nick Curtis. I'm a real estate agent in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And for age, I am, get off the internet, I need to use the phone, 36 years old. And for fun, I like outdoorsy stuff here in Michigan, kayaking, boating, camping. I have a motorcycle. In the winter, I do kind of become a little bit of a recluse, so working on that. But I do have a boyfriend named Rafa, so that's awesome. And then a dog named Pando.
Very nice. I love the outdoor stuff. And I love, Nick and I follow each other on social media, and I love seeing like the adventures that you take your pup on. Like, it's very, very cool. You guys do, you've done like a lot of camping with that dog, right?
Yeah, he goes, he's 100% my sidekick, my little bodyguard. So he goes everywhere with me.
I love it, man. And I feel you on that, becoming a bit of a recluse in the winter. It's, for me, it's trying to like figure out that balance. Like, is this a, like, do I take this time as an opportunity to rest and just take it in, you know, do a little bit of hibernation and relaxation? Or is there something else I can find outside to do, right?
Yeah. I mean, I do think we're kind of like bears, right? In the winter, we're meant to just hibernate for a little while, come out into the spring, ready to take on the world.
Yeah, I feel you. Nick, let's do what we came here to do, man, and talk about your journey with alcohol. Yeah, let us know what's a good starting point, maybe some first exposure or experimentation, and then we'll walk forward.
Totally. So my first exposure to alcohol, I think I was like 7 years old. My brother and I stole one of my stepdad's beers and split it in the garage. I thought it was absolutely disgusting, and I had no idea how any human could ever possibly want to drink something like that. So luckily, my jumping off point was not at 7 years old. But yeah, I ended up, I think, pretty typical introduction to alcohol. Around high school, stealing out of our parents' liquor cabinets, trying to refill the bottles as much as we could. One of my good friends, I'm going to rat on her a little bit, we would pillage her parents' pantry. And I think that they had like their special occasion stuff. So it went unnoticed for a while, but it started off very lighthearted, fun, normal high school shenanigans. I will say as a younger kid, I had a lot of anxiety. This is all looking back with hindsight. Social anxiety was really bad. When I was a teenager, if I was crossing the street, I'd be worried what the car sitting at the light was thinking of me, kind of anxiety. And it would just, you know, well up and kind of take over. And I didn't know really how to function. So when I found alcohol, while it wasn't necessarily a problem at first, I really liked the lowered inhibitions. I really, you know, I just didn't care what people were thinking. And I was able to cut loose and just be a little bit more of my, I think, what I thought at the time was my authentic self.
Yeah, that's a common theme and something I can really relate to, that hypervigilance and that constant awareness of like what's happening around me. And then also like feeling like all eyes are on you and trying to be like what you think they want you to be or mm-hmm. Anyway. I relate to that. That just that super, super vigilant attitude of what are they thinking of me?
Absolutely. You know, so I'm fortunate I've done a little bit of therapy work and looking back, I had a great childhood in most regards, but it was a little bit of a chaotic environment. There's some emotional regulation issues. So at any moment, the other shoe could drop. And I think that I just picked up always having to keep an eye on my surroundings for like those hazards that could be coming my way. And I think that made me really just kind of hyper aware, which keeps you in like that low grade fight or flight all the time. Just not a cool place to be at.
Yeah. Yeah. Always trying to do like whatever it takes to maintain that sort of homeostasis, right? What could be a negative experience, and we'll do whatever we have to avoid that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great, it would be nice to have that awareness in the moment, right? Rather than, you know, however many years later, but.
Definitely. Well, I think it's also important for me to know that like I'm a gay person. So as someone who was coming to terms with that in a really conservative city, I kept that a secret for a while. And it kind of gnaws at you when you're watching your existence play out on the news, whether you should have rights or shouldn't have rights. And you start asking feeler questions to your family, like what would happen if I turned out gay? And my parents handled it very well. However, their knee jerk, I think, was that of most parents in West Michigan. I think it was concern and love, and that they would have preferred for me not to be gay, because I think they thought it would give me an easier life. I don't think they realized how hurtful that ended up being in the long run, but I don't begrudge them for that. I know that they're looking out for their kiddo and in my best interest. But I think having that internal struggle really primed me for drinking and disconnecting and checking out. I've said this a lot in AA. I don't necessarily think I'm addicted to alcohol. I think I'm addicted to fucked up. And I like to check out. Alcohol is just the main mode of transportation that got me there the quickest.
preferred means. Okay. So with, like you said, starting off in kind of this stereotypical usage, curiosity, and then recognizing that alcohol had some value. How long do you think it was just kind of that like normal curious drinking before it morphed into recognizing that it was that tool that it was kind of masking some of that anxiety or quieting that voice?
Truthfully, not long. I remember being maybe 19 and I was really sick and I was driving myself to the ER for like food poisoning or something like that. And I remember thinking at that time, man, it really sucks. I don't want to drink today, but I have to. That was like my first like, oh, there is another voice in my brain, like at the helm. Like, I don't feel good. I do not want to drink, but I knew that hours later I would be. So I don't think I had a short shelf life on the normal drinking.
Yeah, I can relate to that. It was when I realized what it did for me, that almost like instantaneous relief of just being able to quiet that. Going back to, you know, talking about your sexuality and growing up in a conservative region, did that time frame of being able to like come out and talk to your family, did that correlate with the usage, or was that something that came later?
They were pretty close. It did come a hair later. So I was really, I think, fortunate to have the foresight that if people were going to, like friends or family were going to disown me, I wanted to rip that Band-Aid sooner than later. So I actually came out to my family like 15, 16 years old, just because I had heard so many horror stories of, you know, families not reacting well. And luckily my parents did not, I was not kicked out or anything like that. But I just wanted to rip that Band-Aid as soon as possible. So if I did have to rebuild my life, I would know who was in my corner out the gate.
Yeah, I just want to acknowledge that I can't even find like a parallel to, I think earlier you described it so well, like watching parts of your life unfold and watching this entire social commentary about you, and to really have no say in it, and just how that, just want to acknowledge that, fuck man, that just sounds incredibly like painful and difficult. And I'm sorry that you and like so many other people have had to endure that and to have that statement, you know, like you said, I think it does come from, you know, a place of love, like, oh gosh, I wish this, you know, what I would wish for you is to not have to deal with this, but that it just, it'll be painful too. And yeah, I'm glad that you did get support, you know, that you weren't like completely cast aside and
totally. And it's hard to like wrap my brain around, because I think you just kind of build up walls, emotional walls on these subjects. So it's been kind of nice to rewrite it a little bit and get ready for this interview to take a look at it. Cause being 36, it's been some time since I've come out, and it is wild to think about that. Like, gay marriage wasn't a thing until I think it was 2015. Like, we hasn't been that long, you know, but we're moving in the right direction for sure.
You know, I feel like there's the last few years, if we go back to like, not to listen, we're not going to turn this into a political show, but the last few years and the things, especially that happened in the pandemic, it's been an opportunity for a lot of people to just learn about the impact of our statements and what they have on other people's lives. And just like I just said, hearing you say that, seeing the rest of the world provide commentary on my life, I think that's an incredibly powerful statement. At least it is for me, to just like, as humans, pay attention to like what we're saying and the impact that could have on someone, just like, even if we don't know. Not so much worrying about offending someone, but thinking about caring about our fellow man and approaching all of our statements from a place of love. Anyway, weird little sidekick for me. Yeah, let's get back to your story. And thank you for sharing that, Nick. I appreciate it. I appreciate these moments. I think it's our responsibilities to educate ourselves, but also I appreciate people like you just sharing what you're being willing to share, what your experience is, and give other folks an opportunity to learn from it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think addiction was going to get me regardless. That was pretty much like drawn in the sand, but I think representation does matter. And, I think this next generation is pretty cool. Like there was some old timers who really set me up for success. And I one day will be the old timer, hopefully setting someone else up for success. But yeah. Thank you for that.
Good word. All right. So we are late teens-ish in your story.
Yep.
You're fully into using alcohol. You've had, you mentioned bringing yourself in for like quote unquote food poisoning or not feeling so good. Let's talk about keep going forward with the progression.
Yeah. So I got into the food service industry, which, I think every industry will claim that they party hard. I will say, as someone who's been in many different industries, that the bar, restaurant, hotel people are a different breed. It was just so normal and so commonplace. There was no guardrails because no one had their own guardrails. So we were just kind of free to be wild and do whatever we wanted. So I started off in kitchens and kind of got my way into bars, specifically gay bars, which that's going to come up a few times throughout my story because it's relevant that I felt super accepted and welcome there. However, there was not a role model in that building, like we were all just there to party. And I have these like big doughy eyes looking for any type of, responsible adult to show me the way. And turns out like we were the adults in the room, not really up to the best decision making. And I mean, by 21, I remember thinking, oh, my drinking will have to be addressed at some point. I knew then was not the time. Like in my mind, I'm like, I'll get my shit together by my 30s. But I was drinking every day, hungover every morning, probably starting at 22, all the way up into my 30s. And that's the part of my story that's a little boring. It's just kind of wash, rinse, repeat. I maintain some air quotes level of functionality. My drinking never really started till my responsibilities for the day were over. So if I was opening the restaurant and out by 3, great. Started drinking at 3. If I was closing the restaurant or bar, whatever it was, great. I'm not drinking till 11 p.m. I always paid my bills and all those things. And I think that was a little bit of a trap for me that I just got stuck in the day-to-day slog of I'm drinking, I don't really want to be drinking, and I'm hungover, and I definitely don't want to be hungover.
Yeah. We hear the term high functioning thrown around a lot. And I always feel like that needs this asterisk because like, as you're describing meeting all your, your adult responsibilities. So yeah, technically like, could that be considered high functioning? But what's the benchmark, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I am a believer that there's really no such thing as a functional alcoholic. Like just because you're getting through does not mean you're functioning.
Yeah. Many of us have been able to go from A to B to C technically on paper, but look at all the chips we're leaving on the table by impairing ourselves. I don't know what that, you know what I'm trying to say, right?
Spend your life going from being drunk to being hungover. I mean, you can only put your left foot in front of your right foot. Like you cannot plan ahead. There is no big picture thinking. Like you might do some annual New Year's resolution goal setting, but above and beyond that, like you are just surviving.
During this extended period where it was kind of that wash, rinse, repeat, you mentioned that even as young as 21, that you're like, one day this is going to have to stop. During that extended period, were there any moments that was like, maybe I should give this a shot or any attempts at it?
Yeah, it was always like, I've always thought of myself as being healthy-ish. And I would do these challenges where it'd be like, I'm going to change my diet. I was a smoker too, cigarette smoker. I quit some years back also, but I would do these like little kicks where I'm like, okay, I can change this behavior for 30 days. And I did a few of those, probably starting in my late 20s. I usually didn't make it very far. By like week 2, I was like, nah, I'm good enough. I've made it. I've proven my point. Nothing to see here.
Yeah. It's crazy how long we can stay in that trend right? I think alcohol is incredibly tricky that way. I've heard people describe it as like it'll kill you by the inch.
Totally.
Just with that, the social acceptability of it, it's like we can get stuck in that cycle for a long time before there's any sort of deviation of the path. So let's keep going into your early 30s now. You've been at this for a while. What were things looking like?
So it was funny. I got into that like pre-contemplation phase of quitting drinking, and I got stuck there for like a year or two. I was probably like, I don't know, 32 years old. It was like 2017, 18-ish. And I just remember, God, it's so funny, like filling up the bathtub, pouring a cocktail, and like watching Do I Have Drinking Issues on YouTube? Like, just like trying to figure out like what was going on and do I have a problem? Do I not have a problem? I've always kept my job. You know, there's just all these things that kept steering me back to like, nah, you're fine. But I mean, deep down I knew like people should not be feeling this way. I started, at the time I was on ADHD medication, Adderall, and that just spiraled quickly. I was abusing it all the time because I realized if you take two in the morning, you could pull yourself out of a hangover pretty quick. And then if you take one while you're drinking, you can keep going. It has the same effect as cocaine on the body. So not that I know anything about that, Mom.
It's a little alchemist, Nick.
Okay. I am so glad you brought that up. Towards the end, I felt like a machine that I was fine tuning. Like, okay, I can take half an Adderall now and have two drinks. And then, well, I got to make sure I eat first so I don't get shaky. Like there was just a whole thing to it to maintain like my homeostasis, as it were. I didn't realize, you know, the body can actually do that without your help.
Isn't it insane? I'm going to say the majority of our guests have some sort of a ritual similar to what you're describing. Like I know, when I get home, if I take these gravel roads, that gives me enough time where I can put a sixer away. I'll be good when I get in the door. I've got a stash here, a stash there, a stash here. If I need to get a couple before I leave the house, then like this is like all these canned excuses or these absurd, you know, not judgmental, just observational, right? These absurd behaviors that we normalize, right? And I think again, like killing us by the inch. I think each of these little things that we do, it's like one piece gets added at a time. And maybe we feel a little, oh shit, I don't feel so great about having a beer or two before I left. But like we do it enough times, it's just normal.
Yep.
So then to have three or four or like these little routines just slowly develop.
Totally. And then the rules start crumbling. Like I was a food and beverage manager for a hotel. And I remember like, oh, I don't drink till my responsibilities are over for the day. Unless it's a gin tasting for this new menu, or unless it's X, Y, and Z, where it's like, well, yeah, I'm about to be bartending a wedding. I should probably have a shot to like, you know, get my personality going for the night.
So, right. Be silly not to.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's crazy. And I think everybody comes on, just about everybody has some version of that. Right. And it's like, and it's our little secret that nobody else on the planet, like, fuck, I cannot tell anybody. Like this would be embarrassing if anybody knew. And as soon as I hear someone start to talk about it, I'm like, yep, let me tell you what mine was. Like it was different, but it was also the exact same.
Yep. I do love that about recovery people is like the shedding of shame where you're just like, oh yeah, me too.
Yeah. We need it. I think it's just a sense of relief. And you know, there's times where it's a little close to home. Like I gotta be careful with my audience because some of the stuff, if I mentioned to like my wife or my family, they'd just look at me like, you did what? And I'm like,
right.
Oh, okay. So this had an impact on you. And maybe you're not ready to hear this today. So I'm going to talk to someone else, but just to know that there were others that had a version of it. And I'm glad that we can laugh about it. Also, like it's like super serious and super sad.
Yeah.
But we got to laugh about it a little bit too.
I couldn't agree more. It's just like, what, you've never turfed a golf course with your Suburban? Do you even live life?
Right. So we had a year or so of, I forget how you said it, but just like
in the slog of it. Yep.
Yeah. And the visualization of like having a cocktail in the bath while watching sobriety or recovery stuff on YouTube. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be an interesting stat, like how many people are under the influence while watching, either listening to this podcast or watching those videos on YouTube. I think that is also very a very relatable experience.
Yep.
Let's talk about that last year. What was happening? You know, you started to do a little bit of research, started to do a little bit of digging in. You were finding reasons that this wasn't you, that it wasn't your time. How did that shift eventually start to take place?
Yeah. So in 2018, I realized like I couldn't do this on my own and I didn't know who to turn to. And so I reached out to, there's an amazing treatment program here in Grand Rapids called Sanford House. I'll give them a shout out. There's a men's facility, a women's facility, and I joined them for like a 30-day IOP treatment. So I would join the people who live there for their treatment for like 5 hours a day. And I actually got a little traction and I learned a bit about addiction and how it plays out in your brain and in your life. And I made it 4 months that I was sober in 2018, started going to AA regularly, found good connection there. But the reality was like, I just wasn't ready. I was in a long-term relationship, like no judgment on them. They also drank heavy. And when it came time to quit drinking, there was just so much change. I got 4 months in and I just like willingly retreated. I was just like, I can't do this. So I went back to drinking. And unfortunately, I did get stuck there for a couple more years. Just like I slipped right back into that wash, rinse, repeat. But I had all these moments that should have been rock bottoms, like being pulled over. Luckily, knock on wood, I never got a DUI. I should have had many, 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 many. So like that is not a judgment statement at all. And I just had all these moments that should have been the big awakening moment. And it wasn't clicking. Until one day I was out on a hike with my dog. And it's funny how simple this is. I was so hungover. He was a little puppy, just a couple months old. And I could tell you exactly where I was in this park and what tree I was looking at. It just hit me. I'm like, you are miserable. You only get one life. Is this how you want to live it? And I knew the answer was no. And I knew exactly where I needed to go. And the next day I was back in AA and just sought recovery through that. I had learned enough at Sanford House. I had done enough research and YouTubing in the bathtub and all of that, that I had the knowledge. It just came time to apply the damn stuff.
I love that, man. It's, you know, like you said, like sometimes we're just not ready. And that, you know, that's a hard spot to be because we know the pain and like nobody wants to go back out. Because we don't know what that clock is going to be. You know, unfortunately, there's some that never come back to quitting, but it's a scary place to go. But yeah, like what a simple but beautiful moment to be out with your dog and just to kind of have this epiphany of like, what do you really want?
Right.
You know? And what do you deserve? And how beautiful like to actually to recognize that you have a say in that, right? You've got some agency in your life.
100%. And like, when I got back into the program, AA, which there are so many ways, like I'm an AA fan, but I am the person that like I take what I need and I leave the rest, especially in West Michigan. It can get a little churchy. So I found a good group to run with. So that was good. But I decided to take it serious and put some effort into it. And I found a sponsor and it worked out amazingly. He still is an older gay man who doesn't believe in like the Christian version of God or the Catholic version of God. So we were able to kind of align there. And I actually worked the program and when I like worked the steps and I was like, you know, I don't know if this is going to work. I think maybe it's a little hokey, but boy, it seems to work for other people. So maybe I'll trust the process a little bit. And I'll tell you, like actually getting through the steps, I don't know what it is about that necessarily, if it's just that for once I followed through with something all the way to the bitter end. But man, it just really broke me free. I started chairing meetings like once a week. That helped me stay accountable during the first year. And then I just made sure to celebrate those milestones. Like I went with you guys to Costa Rica for my 1 year. It was just like this beautiful, like awesome moment. Super emotional. I love it.
What a gift to yourself. I think that's beautiful, Nick. I'm a big I'm a big 12-step guy too. You know, it's, I mean, there are many roads, and by no stretch of the imagination, I don't think either of us are saying that that's the only way. But I do know that for me, they also carried a lot of power, if not for exactly what you said, just like knowing that I can stick to something and I can do it. And I think a big part of that too, like you mentioned, is finding a sponsor. I think that's can be a beautiful relationship. It can be challenging too, right? Because there's as many types of sponsors as there are as there are people willing to sponsor. But when we can find that person that relates to our experience, that's gonna give us that balance of like holding us accountable, but also like loving us where we're at.
Yep.
Having that relatability, I think that can make all the difference in the world as to what that experience is like.
Absolutely. And I will throw it out there that might sound funny, but it's okay to shop a sponsor and like try them out. You know, I think it's important to get a good match because there are people, I don't know what AA looks like where you're at, but here we're really fortunate. We have a North Club and a South Club. And I mean, we have a room that seats well over 100, and then there's like maybe 10 other breakout rooms. So it's huge and it attracts all types of people. And there's some crazies in there. There's some not so crazies in there. So I think it's okay to not just raise your hand and take whoever offers their help first and kind of look for someone like I did with like aligned values. I think that's really important.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And there's, you know, I've heard the terminology used like temporary, you know? Yeah, I'd like to like a temporary sponsor. And that's kind of a soft opening to like, let's see how this feels. You know, my first one was a great guy, but not the right guy for me. And the guy I have now has been like four years or more. And it's a good dynamic, but yeah, anyway, not to spend too much time on that, but I think it's a beautiful thing. And there's a lot of power there, but I also know, just from visiting and our correspondence leading up to this, that there's been some other things, some other tools and pathways that you've used as well.
100%. So I kind of went on like this quest for sobriety, and I did try Smart Recovery, which was great. I think it's a good program for people who are a little more, I don't want to say free thinking, because I'm not trying to imply AA people aren't, but like they encourage crosstalk. They encourage like opinions. And so for that more like creative individual, I think that could be
analytical maybe.
Yeah, that's probably a better way to put it, actually. And then also just exploring with meditation. I don't know why I thought that you had to be like a monk on top of a mountain to do that. Once I learned that meditating can be one focused breath in and out, like my go-to is to pick a tree. I don't know why they're always trees. And I take one breath in, study the tree, one breath out. And by the end of that, I'm like relaxed. Like I'm a new human, whatever it was that was gnawing at me. Can take a backseat.
It's a lot of power in the present moment, right?
So true.
And then you also mentioned, Nick, going to Costa Rica to celebrate your 1 year, which I have not been. I've been invited on everyone, but it just with a wife and kids, it hasn't happened yet. But it is on my list to go on one of these overseas RE trips. What were some of those connections like? What was that your first kind of like bigger sobriety recovery trip?
Totally. So I fell into the podcast just by Googling or, you know, typing into the podcast app, like, hey, recovery stuff. And an ad came up for it, like, hey, we're going to Costa Rica and it's this date to this date. And I'm like, oh, holy shit, that's my 1 year. How cool would that be? Like, I've never traveled. And like, I used to spend like $50 a day on drinking. Like, I might as well, I have all this money now and all this time. I might as well do something fun. And so, yeah, I did. I went for the trip and it was amazing. I made some really cool friends. I had an awesome roommate who he's been to like almost everything that you guys do, but he was a good tour guide for me. But just being able to bond with a bunch of very like-minded people, like not only are we sober, but like we adventure, we do things, we go out and travel. Like my life didn't end. You know what I mean? When I quit drinking, and this was like a really good sign that there was just awesomeness to come.
I love that, man. It can be a little nerve-wracking to meet up with a bunch of strangers and travel, right?
Totally.
But what a blessing to be able to, I think there's something incredibly special about these like recovery trips, you know, like we mentioned earlier, it's a weird group of people where we can go from like talking about like our next activity, our next hike, or are we going to go play dodgeball? Let's talk about some trauma. Like, what was the worst part of your childhood? What's the scariest moment that you've had? Have you ever almost died? Can I get you another sandwich?
Right. Oh, yeah. And I don't know. It was like an introduction to a lot for me too. Like, that was my first experience with breath work. And while I didn't necessarily have like this big aha moment, I think I was just too timid to lean into it. I did come out of that experience feeling very like connected and lighter. I've since gone to Bozeman the last 2 years and did breath work both those times. And like, not to be a drama queen here, but pretty transformative experience. Yeah, good stuff.
Breath work is one of those cool things. And it's, you know, I've done a lot of breath work on my own, but I always look forward to that. You know, I don't mean to turn this into like a Bozeman sales pitch, but that getting, you know, 70, 80 people together, just breathing together with some weird hippie music going, which I'm totally there for, like, and just doing this collective breathing. It, I don't know. It's just a really cool experience. Takes you to another place.
Super healing. And like we talked about earlier, I used to be afraid of what the car at the red light was thinking of me. And now I can snot cry in front of 70 people and say it was one of the best experiences of my life. So, you know, recovery is funny like that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Nick, we've got a little bit of time left. What's in the future? You've got 3 years under your belt. Sounds like you've got a pretty good gig going right now. What are you looking forward to?
You know, it's funny. I'm looking forward to everything. But like last year, I did a big career change. I got my real estate license. I left the hospitality career behind and I'm trying something new. So like every step into this year has been in a new direction, but it's wild. I'm 36 and I feel the best I've ever felt. I have all this energy and now I actually have the capacity to do something with it. So my big plans are staying focused in my recovery. I do know if I lose that and everything else, adios, you know, see you later. So, but I hope to travel more, grow into my career and just be able to fund and live the life that I want moving forward, you know, daily adventures with Pando, going hiking and yeah, just enjoying.
I love it, man. Brother Nick, with that, we are at the rapid fire round. I'm going to ask you some questions. We'll give you 30 to 60 seconds to answer. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right, let's go for it. Number one, what was your biggest fear as you were thinking about quitting drinking?
With hindsight, I think I was afraid of losing the little bit of identity that I had.
Yeah, I feel you there. Who will I be without this?
Yep.
Number two, what is a positive that you did not expect in a life without alcohol?
I have to say, in the nicest way possible, not giving a fuck what other people think about me. I didn't know that was going to happen, and it's pretty freeing.
You can cross the street scot-free. I love it. What is your go-to alcohol-free drink?
Oh, I know you're a LaCroix fan, but the lime bubbly is kind of my jam.
All right. As long as you're in that sparkling water realm, I'm okay with it. We will allow it. What is your favorite resource in recovery? This can be a book, an app, a meeting, a movie, a podcast, whatever you think.
Genuinely, this podcast, it was super helpful to get. There was so much material to binge. It kept me so like engaged. And now I look forward to hearing people's stories. This podcast.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Nick. Mm-hmm. In regards to sobriety, what's the best advice you've ever received?
Just trust the process. If other people have been successful at it, you probably will be too.
Yeah. What parting piece of guidance can you give to our listeners who are thinking about recovery or early in their sobriety?
Good question. I think addiction is like a Chinese finger trap. The harder you fight it, the more entangled you are. So just let go. Just let go. You'll be fine.
Love that. And last but certainly not least, Nick, can you give listeners your favorite "you might need to ditch the booze if" line?
I was really looking forward to this, I'm not gonna lie. Okay, You may need to ditch the booze if you walk out of your apartment building, you look to the left and you look to the right, and you genuinely have no idea which way to go to find your car.
That'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be a clue. Nick, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for being a listener too. Thank you for opening up and sharing your experience. You're going to help a lot of people, man. I appreciate your vulnerability.
I appreciate that. I love you guys. You've been so like awesome in my recovery. So I'm glad I get to give back a little bit.
Love you too, brother. And hope to see you out in the mountains again soon.
Definitely.
Take care. Recovery Elevator, thanks for listening. And thank you, Nick, for coming on the show. You're going to help a lot of people today. I met someone last week, and through a mutual friend, my involvement with Recovery Elevator came up. My new friend asked if they could hear a bit more about my sobriety journey. They're a new parent, and they've noticed how easy it can be to earn those nights where you turn it all off with a few drinks. They've also noticed the progression and the impact that it's starting to have on their relationship. I'm so incredibly blessed and honored to be in a place in my life where I can share my story and help others share theirs. To be able to ask questions and help someone see things through a different lens. To simply reframe some of the language surrounding alcohol use, addiction, recovery, and our relationships with booze. We're in a space now where the options are plentiful, and the point of entry into the sober curious or recovery world is better than ever. We still have work to do, but we're headed in the right direction. Keep telling your story, RE. Share what's worked for you. Share what's worked for others. Recognize that there are multiple paths to recovery, and empower the people around you to dip their toes in the water. We're the only ones that can do this, RE, but we don't have to do it alone. I love you guys.